We so relate to Kitty Kelly because the first time we went out, or first or second time we went out together as the Kitchen Sisters to do an interview, we went to Les and Stevie Liebenberg, who were a father and son tree-topping team in the mountains of Santa Cruz, because our focus was local history and all the important industries of the area, and lumber was one of them. And we went up, they told, oh, we work late on summer nights, you know, we got to get it all in, and so we won't be back till about 9, 9:30. Oh, that's fine, we'll meet you up in the mountains at 9:30, no problem. Oh, where are we going? Oh, God, this is scary. Okay, fine, no problem, we'll go. So we get to the house.
We made the first mistake here. As oral historians, when you're out in the field, always tell someone where you're going.
And this was before the cell phone. And so we're up in the mountains, and we get there, and the first thing we notice are Quaker oat containers, oatmeal containers piled high from floor to ceiling, but hundreds of them, and guns in sort of haystacks, and newspapers piled up. And no matter what we do to ask Mr. and Mr. Liebenberg about tree topping, they refuse to talk about that. They want to show us their 36 trained and tamed rattlesnakes who live in their tool chest that rides on the back of their pickup truck, and they dress the rattlesnakes in senorita gowns. And they're on trapezes. And you listen to this tape, and then there's one point on the tape where I can't remember if it's me or Nikki, but you hear one of us saying, can I touch the rattlesnakes? Anyway, I always think of that when I hear Kitty Kelly and Sigmund Rosenberg.
So always tell people where you're going and what you're doing.
And bring a snake bite kit.
Exactly. The unexpected. One of the things that we loved about doing our live radio program was sort of discovering different people's lives through home recordings and material that just sort of showed up in people's attics. And when we started doing the Lost and Found Sound Project, we knew that in addition to the archives out there, the sound collections, that people had material in their own personal archives, home recordings, old tapes, cassettes, phone messages. So we wanted a way to sort of cast a net out, a really broad net, and bring in some of these personal home recordings. And we also didn't know, maybe somebody would have something historically significant and fantastic in a private collection. So we put out the call on the radio, on one of our first broadcasts for Lost and Found Sound, asking people to send us their or asking people to tell us about their home recordings. And if we thought that it was an interesting story, then we would go and try and find a way to play these recordings. Now, these recordings sometimes required wire players, cylinder machines, cactus needles. I mean, we never quite knew what it was going to take to play these old recordings, but this was the beginning in getting into this technology search as well. So this was we're going to play an excerpt from a story that came into us through the Lost and Found Sound Quest for Sound line. And
some 3,000 people called. We started it in January of last year, and by the end of the year, about 3,000 people called in, and obviously we didn't do 3,000 stories, but about half of what you heard last year in the series and continue to hear comes from listeners' calls, and it's been one of the most fun parts of it. And sometimes the people's stories are better than the sound that they have, because memory is that way, and because, as Nikki said, the sound was so old or distressed or impossible to play, but just that they had shared their stories. And at one point, Jay Allison, who you'll hear, who was our co-collaborator on the series from Woods Hole, Massachusetts, did a story about how we had heard from every state in the nation except Wyoming, and he couldn't figure out what the problem was with Wyoming. And the next week, we were inundated with Lost and Found Sound stories from Wyoming. So here comes one from Florida.